It is rare these days for a leader to guide a university for more than a few years or so, which is why Freeman Hrabowski is such an outlier. For the last 30 years, he served as president for the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. He's credited with turning the small institution within the University of Maryland system into a nationally recognized gateway for students of color to pursue math and science. At the end of this academic year, Hrabowski is retiring, and under his leadership, UMBC now sees more Black graduates go on to pursue PhDs in engineering than any other college in the country. We thought it would be fun to do an exit interview of sorts with the outgoing president, and we started with whether Hrabowski's mission was clear when he arrived at the school back in 1987.
It was not. I simply knew we wanted to have more students succeeding of all races. And we realized we had a particular problem with students of color because of academic preparation. And so the mission and what we've done both have been evolving over the years.
Well, one of your most notable graduates is immunologist Kazmikia Corbett. She's credited with leading the team that developed the Moderna vaccine against the coronavirus. And she said that what sets you apart is that you understand that it takes resources to do what you've done. Money and resources seem to be in short supply for colleges and universities that don't have large endowments. How have you been able to navigate this challenge?
You know, we've been very, very fortunate. Robert Meyerhoff helped to endow the program in early years, and we've gotten funding from NIH and other national agencies and some companies. And so it's the combination of resources and a commitment from faculty and staff to make a difference. And it takes, I say this in my TED Talk, it takes scientists to produce scientists. And so one of the most important parts of this success has been that the scientists here, along with other faculty, have made it their business to make sure that students of all races are succeeding. And we're very proud of what we've done for each group.
Having a great program and strong faculty is one thing. Getting students to then show up is another.
Right.
You've got a lot of competition in and out of state. How do you convince prospective students that your school is the one?
In the early years, colleagues and I, faculty and administrators and I, were talking with parents a lot. Now, our challenge is we have so many students wanting to be here, not just in the Meyerhoff program, but in general. And it is about, really about the fact that our alumni and our students and their families are the recruiters. They tell people, if you want to become a scientist, go to UMBC. If you want to go to law school, go to UMBC. So we get that message all the time. And people send their next generation. So we now have children and sometimes grandchildren of students who attended here because they go on to the best of graduate and professional schools, or they stay here and go to grad school and get incredible jobs in this region, in the Baltimore-Washington corridor and beyond.
You have a long lens because you've been there for so many decades.
Yes.
So you've seen firsthand, though, how affordability has now become one of the largest obstacles for Black and brown students.
Yes.
How have you been able to navigate that reality?
Sure. We work hard to find funds to give students the support, the financial support they need. And we have great partnerships with employers, companies, and national agencies that will allow students to have paid internships and research experiences that can also help pay for that education. And that makes a big difference. It really does. We need students to have those opportunities to work and go to school and work in the summer in majors or in fields that are related to their majors. And that makes a big difference.
You touched on this when I asked you if your mission was clear when you arrived to the university in 1987. But the work you do also requires, to a certain extent, that the pipeline of Black and brown students interested in pursuing math and science is strong,
right?
Which means by
right.
the time a student gets to UMBC, they need
yes.
to have the foundational framework. How
sure.
do you navigate that reality, the disparity in educational offerings, so that by the time they get to you, they're ready?
It's a great question, Tanya. We work very closely with K-12 systems in this state. We're working to help build a pipeline of students, some of whom will come here, others will go other places. The other part is that this is a place known for high-achieving students, people want to be here. I mean, you need a culture where people feel good about working hard and doing well. You know, what people don't realize is that large numbers of the highest achieving students in our country of course, are grad students who are from other countries, but there are large numbers of undergraduates, whether here in the Baltimore-Washington corridor or in New York, whose parents are from other countries. And they may be from the islands, or they may be from Nigeria or from Russia. And what we see is this, that those students who are first-generation college are often intensely hungry for the knowledge. And that's wonderful for students who've been in this country with families for generations, because it shows just how hard people can work. I mean, the theme on this campus is grit. Our dog, the Chesapeake Bay Retriever, our mascot, is true grit. And we say that UMBC is the house of grit. And so when you walk around the campus, it feels like the Plaza of Nations at the UN. But you also see students who are from inner city Baltimore or D.C. or kids out of New York. They're learning how to work together. And most important, they have very high standards for themselves. As I say in the TED Talk, high expectations, building community, having scientists and humanists, building people into those disciplines, and finally evaluate what you're doing. It is that sense of the possibilities that I find most exciting about UMBC.
Speaking of your TED Talk,
yes.
You know, you were asked to do that TED Talk because educators and other leaders seek your counsel. They want to hear how you make this work.
Sure.
What's one piece of advice that you give to them?
It is that we must stop believing that most students should get wiped out or just will always get wiped out of science. We call the first year of science weed out courses, and that's not good, not good at all, that most people who begin in science don't succeed. We must have that belief that if we accept the students, that means we are determined to help them succeed in the discipline. And that, but what I say about science, I say about the humanities, social sciences, and other areas. Students need strong reading and thinking skills, regardless of the major. It's very important. If you give me a young child who can read well, I can teach her to solve word problems. And when you think about chemistry or physics or engineering, those are word problems. Mm-hmm. And so if one can't read well, you really can't get into the discipline as you need to. So reading skills, thinking skills, having a sense of self and believing in oneself, all very important. So we do that with K-12, and we especially do it at UMBC. We take great pride. When we won the mock trial competition against wonderful Yale University a few months ago, believe me, this middle-class place was as excited about that as we were when we beat UVA in 2018. And that's a nice thing when you can be as excited about mock trial or about chess as you are about basketball.
You know, retirement means so many different things these days. What does it mean to you?
Oh, it means I'm retiring from UMBC, but I have a long way to go. I'm looking forward to doing more and more with other universities around the country. I'm privileged to do some work with Harvard, with new presidents and academic administrators now. And I'm looking forward to continuing to do that. But I enjoy having the opportunity to work with university boards and presidents and provosts and faculty members, and working with companies on issues involving everything from the economy to leadership to D&I, to diversity and inclusion.
I hope you're going to have some fun, too. Or is that your definition of fun?
Well, that's a part of it. I'm going around the country right now with the current book we wrote, The Empowered University, and with Hopkins Press. And we're working with Hopkins to put out another book in the next year to come out on this post-COVID period. That's all fun. But I study French. My students and I speak French every day, and I enjoy that a great deal.
I wish I knew French well enough to throw out a couple of sentences to you right now.
Apollinaire, the poet said, "La joie venait toujours après la peine." And it means the joy comes after the struggle. And my students laughed at me several years ago when I said, I'm going to start studying French with some of you. And they said, "Don't you think you're kind of old?" I said, "Bring it on."
Oh, what year did you start? What year did you start learning?
About 4 years ago, Ilia Caton. I started about 4 years ago. And mes étudiants et moi, nous parlons le français chaque jour. Mon professeur est un originaire de Normandie. I mean, I'm enjoying it more than ever. I'm studying French philosophers, Madame Beauvoir, Monsieur Hugo, and it is said très difficile, mais je parle français. I enjoy it.
A leader, but forever a student, right?
Exactly.
Well, what's one memory of your time there that you'll be looking back on for the rest of your life?
You know, it's probably this period of COVID has been a period to allow all of us to look in the mirror and ask the question, who are we? Who are we? And what I am most inspired by is the sense of community that we have seen here in American higher education, in other parts of the world, but here at UMBC, that to see my students and faculty colleagues and staff all pulling together and saying, we can get through this. So we end our talks. I do this with all of my meetings. I leave it with the thought, each meeting, keep hope alive. It sounds trite, but it's so true. That's what I remember about UMBC and about our country at this point, that we still have hope. With all the problems, we still have hope. And that is what we all need to remember.
That was University of Maryland, Baltimore County President Freeman Hrabowski. Thank you so much for this conversation and congratulations.
Thank you, Tanya. This has been a great interview. Keep hope alive.